Okay, let's start with group number one. Come to the front of the room and tell us, your reporter, tell us what we know about the mask, its content, and its function. And when you finish sharing about it, Joe, light the candle for the mask.
So the mask blocks, hides. It pretends it's a false protector. It only cares about looking good. It has a false pretense. Pretends to be nice, superficial, and is seeking acceptance. And what it does is cover the lower self so that we don't have to experience that.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's how we act.
Right. It's what we show the world. It's how we want to be seen.
Yeah.
And may or may not be true.
Yeah, parts of it can be true, but...
Yeah. But the motive is to pretend and hide about who we are, which is going to relate very much to the lecture tonight.
This, for example, challenges my mask self.
Did we get it all? Did we miss anything?
We'll find out. The fourth group will let us know if we left anything out. Okay, group number two, the lower self.
Okay, the lower self. These are the adjectives we came up with. Sinister, mean, cruel, jealous, immature, needy, wounded, whiny, divisive, possessive, unfinished childhood business, controlling, negative, demanding, jealous, scheming, and judgmental.
That was excellent.
Oh. Good. All right, light the candle to the lower self.
Okay, that would be the dark one,
that's
right?
That's the black one,
I
yes.
figured, yeah.
Again, not to in any way reinforce it, but to bring it into the light of consciousness so that we start more willingly and comfortably seeing it, owning up to it, admitting it, and bringing it home to ourselves.
Isn't this interesting? It doesn't want to light up.
It wants to stay hidden.
It does. Wicked.
Laurel, do you want to say something about the, I'm not going to say the accomplishment of the lower self, but the effect of the lower self?
The accomplishment of the lower self. Well, I guess...
It has a result.
Well, it protects the wounded, unhealed parts.
And what does it separate us from?
Our real higher self.
It separates us from our higher self, exactly. So the mask hides the lower self, and because the lower self keeps hidden and denied, we can't get to that which is most beautiful and wonderful and true and godlike and wise and infinite and strong about us, which is our higher self. So group number three, higher self, and light the higher self candle.
The higher self is connected, true self, it's a union, it's connected to the cosmic reality, authentic, holds wisdom, sacred, comfort, home, infinity, love, can't read the next one, integrated, all-knowing, I don't know what that is.
Good. Okay. Thank you. And the purpose of this work is to come clean about our mask, which is false, which is pretense, so that we can stop hiding our lower self, which is what we're going to work about and work on a lot tonight, so that it can be dissolved and we can get to all that is good and true and wonderful about us. So group number four, what would you like to add to anything we may have missed?
Well, interestingly, I couldn't find anything wrong with my sweethearts groups. But actually, they did a much better job on that than we kind of got our lower self a little into our mask, which I always am responsible for. In the lower self, there were just things like tit for tat, self-righteousness, overreactive, reactive, self-pity, victim, poor me, fear, fury, insecurity, bullying, separation, and the pettiness, blaming, defensiveness, and some of that might have been said, but I didn't get it was. And not only separates us from connection to ourselves, but it separates us from connection to each other and to the universe, and actually just feeling like a part of it all.
Great. Beautiful.
And then the higher self, or some other adjectives, we had open, understanding, grounding, reflective, empathic, rational, kind, compassionate, tolerant, accepting, spiritual, graceful.
Great. And always in truth.
And always in truth.
Always in truth. Anything about the mask that we missed?
No, that one was perfect.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Good job. All right. Very good job. You will see as we go along tonight how important it is that we did that review and updated our consciousness on the mask and the lower self and our higher self.
Is that the first one?
Second one. Okay.
So that is it. So.
Can you do the next one?
Oh, yeah.
So no matter our station in life, the thing that we human beings most share in common is that we are afraid. We are afraid. And no amount of power or acquisition or status or acclaim or money or good fortune or approval can take away this fear, even though we aim for them because we think they will. The fear is at the root of our psyche for everyone. And this is how it operates. If we don't have it, we're afraid and we want it. If we have it, we're afraid of losing it, or someone has it better. So there is no answer to this fear and insecurity that we all live with outside of ourselves. It's what we felt when for the first time as infants or children, and sometimes it was as late as young adults, we had some huge break with belongingness, and we were thrust out into the universe, isolated and separate and on our own, with dread and horror and panic and alarm, and these became our constant companions. And if you would check in with yourself now at this moment, expand yourself and open up, you would see that this fear in all of its many facets and forms still throbs at the core of your being. How many of you can relate to this fact? Yeah, it's universal. We pretend that's not so, but it's so. So what we've done is to put in place many false structures that separate us from this feeling of fear. But it also separates us from the very best in us. And this, in many ways, is the point to the lecture tonight. And what's the very best in us?
A higher self.
A higher self, yes. And though we try everything, there is only one, and there's a lot of irony here, there's only one antidote, there is only one cure, there is only one remedy to how to cope with this fear, and herein lies the biggest fear of all. We are most afraid of the thing that would most help us come to terms with our fear, which is facing ourselves in our totality and ruthless self-honesty. There's nothing that we're more afraid of. And we don't even distinguish that we're afraid of it, but we are. So the only path to overcoming all the fear that is the core of who we are and that pervades our lives in all the ways that it does is the path to self-honesty, self-recognition, self-admission. And there's much about us as human beings that is not pretty. To say the least, it's the condition of being human. But nevertheless, what we're called upon to do is to face and admit all in us that is frightened, scared, broken, dysfunctional, weak, inadequate. That's what we're invited to do. That is the only path to self-unification. And of this, we are most of all terribly afraid. We are afraid of the original fear, and then we are afraid of the structures that we put in place to cope with our fear, which we will be talking about in just a moment. And then those structures themselves create more fear. So this is what we live with. Okay. I missed that when you were on, but it was okay. So because of the fear that lies at the root of our psyche, of our psychology, at the root of our being, and no one is spared, we created what the guide calls a little self, an ego self, to cope with how afraid we are. And the personality we put together to cope with this fear, we call the little self or the false self. We create a little self, a little ego, to cope with how afraid we are, but this little self is the false self. That means it's not real. It's made up by us to cope with how frightened we are, but we hold it and we treat it like it's real. It's just a strategy. It helps us cope and survive, but it is not fulfilling and it is not satisfying. The fact is, it is actually rather miserable, if we were to be honest about it. We're still there. So the personality types are, they fall into three categories, and if you'll check in with yourself, you'll see that one fits most with you. We have one that's leading and one that's kind of secondary. We have the reason type, and this person copes by relying on reason, logic, and a philosophy, and is afraid of their emotions. Any reason types in the room other than I? Okay. All right, the love type relies on emotions without sufficient grounding and reason and will. Any love types in the room?
That. Okay.
And then we have the will type. Copes by attaching to outcome and results and loses sight of what else matters in life, like connections. A will type will run over whatever it has to run over to get its job done, its house clean, its whatever. The will type is very, in order to cope with the fear of the will type, they have to get results. Okay. I do want to add that, and we've talked about this before too, that every one of these types has a higher self quality or a higher self ray. The reason type tends to be very wise. The emotion type tends to be very loving. And the will type has amazing power, and what these people can get done and accomplish and make themselves do is like stunning. So the more we can come to terms with how we use reason and emotion and will to hide who we really are and see the falseness of that and discern that, the more the higher self gift in those strategies can start to infiltrate and flow through our personalities. Does that make sense? Are you with me so far? Yes.
Can I ask one question about the will?
Yes.
I don't understand the power in a positive sense. I need some help to understand that.
What they can accomplish and do, and they're brave and courageous, and they make it happen. Power types in the room, raise your hands. Yeah. Elaine would be an example. What this woman accomplishes in a day, running, yoga, cooking good food, playing pickleball, it goes on, walks, what, how many miles a day, Elaine? 4 or 5 miles a day.
Not every day.
Not
42.
Most days. I mean, you know, and when we've been in groups with Elaine, we'll say, how on earth do you accomplish all of that? That's the will type. That's kind of the higher self raise, array of the will type. On the other hand, using Elaine as an example, if it's okay, there's incredible, incredible pressure around making that happen, and I've got to make it, that's how she copes with her fear. That part of it is false and needs to be healed. So does that help? Seeing each one is very much in distortion until we recognize it and face it. Okay. Okay. Some of the characteristics of these false strategies that we've all created, it's the human condition. They're built on shifting sands, and so they're no real grounding. They do not make us feel less afraid and more secure. They make us feel more afraid. And they're kept in place with what the guide calls three hindrances: pride, self-will, and fear. And pride and self-will and fear are involved in the resistances and the complications that are involved in coming to know ourselves deeply, and surrendering to another human being in love, and in surrendering to death. So it's pride and self-will and fear that really get in the way of that. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the lower self traits of pride, self-will, and fear, in pride, we're pretending to be more than we really are. We may be too proud to have to face the unflattering aspects of ourselves. What happens when someone confronts us with something that feels unflattering?
Defend yourself.
We defend ourselves. Automatically. It's human. Get challenged, get criticized. I'm not that way. Because we can't bear to face that we are. And again, this is not about judging any of us. It's trying to describe our anatomy so we can take responsibility for it and something else can be different. Or we may be too proud to humbly give ourselves over to another person in love. It's, you know, that takes some letting go. It takes some humility. Or, could I use you as an example again, Elaine? Sure. Yeah, I just want to teach from some of your wonderful material. Or we can be too proud to surrender all self-direction in the face of death. I want to be in control. I want to make it happen. And when we're on our way to dying, we give up self-control. We give up direction. And Elaine has talked about how frightening that is, giving that up. And self-will, we want to hang on to that little self that we've been talking about a lot this year. And all of these lectures, we've been addressing self-will. The self-will wants to cling to the familiar and the known. And it wants its way no matter what. How many can identify with that? Mm-hmm. I want my way, no matter what. And if I don't get my way, I'm frightened. So that's the way the self-will type will cope with the fear that we're addressing for all of us tonight. The fear one I really like most of all, and this will come a lot from the love type person. I refuse to trust the highest and the best that is in me. And I refuse to trust in the highest and best that's in life. Yeah, I refuse. I feel like I will fare better if I just stay devoted to my little emotion-type mask than to dare to give that up and really risk trusting the infinite capacity within me and the infinite capacity in life. I'm going to hang on for dear life. Anybody can identify with that? Yeah, I'm not going to trust. It's too dangerous. So pride and self-will and fear are very much involved in knowing the self, which is what we're going to be working on. We're going to be challenged to do that tonight. Very much involved in surrendering to union and love with another, and very much involved with surrendering to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the theme of tonight's lecture is the specific fear of the unknown. The fear of our own unknown psyche, our own deep, dark depths. It's very frightening to us. And therefore, we are terrified of surrendering to union with another. And therefore, we are afraid of death. And the guide says that these three realities are connected and they are in a very deep relationship with each other. Hold that one. So our ability to love another is dependent upon our ability to know ourselves deeply in all of our aspects, especially our darkly aspects. If we haven't surrendered to that and ourselves, we cannot surrender in a deep and open and trusting way and love to another human being. And the guide says that if we cannot truly surrender and let go into a deep union, a deep love with other human beings, we cannot surrender to death, to the naturalness of death. So our unfaced negativity, lower self, weakness, feelings of inadequacy, vulnerability, meanness, hatefulness, greediness, jealousy, lust, gluttony, envy, pride, our inability, to really face and know these things about ourselves because we're human beings. Not because it's something personal to us. It's because we're human beings. This causes us to isolate and hide and pretend that it isn't so. How many of you can relate to that? So we get very afraid of how we're going to be seen. We're afraid of losing status in our own eyes, and we're afraid of losing status in other people's eyes. And ultimately, we're afraid that if we are known, we're not going to be loved. And this is a really interesting point that the guide makes in one lecture. I don't know if we will ever do it here, but I remember when Kathy and Alicia and I first did our training at 7X 25 years ago. The guide talks about there are pieces of consciousness that, in this particular lecture, I don't know which one it is, the guides called specialists or spirits, that there are specialists in the realms whose specialty is gluttony, whose specialty is lust, whose specialty, remember this, Kathy, pride, whose specialty is envy. Okay, all of that, but this is the point. And this makes sense to me. That if we have this in ourselves, which we do, the guide says we all carry pieces of this consciousness. If we hide this in ourselves and pretend that it isn't so, this is what program works like. AA and OA and NA and Al-Anon, all of those are so important because they're all about facing up to your negative traits. But if we have these pieces of consciousness and we pretend that it isn't so, we attract these specialists and they fix themselves on us and make it worse. Isn't that creepy? I mean, if there's anything that will help you face up to being honest about your crap, it's that. That if you don't, they're going to come in and attack. And, you know, at the first time I heard that, I thought, that's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. But you know what? Now that I know more and more and more and more about the cosmos, and I've had direct experience with some of the evil in the cosmos in the past 9 or 10 years, I get the truth of that. That consciousness is floating around and looking for somewhere to attach. Now, that I'll be saying this many times tonight, the guide is not saying, get rid of your lust. The guide is, although that would be a good thing. The guide is not saying, get rid of your gluttony. And gluttony isn't merely about food. It's about shopping and TV. Gluttony can be about a zillion things. The guide is not saying, get rid of your pride. The guide is saying, know that that exists in you. And take responsibility for it. And that's your protection to make sure that some of those specialists don't attach to us. So I think that's a powerful notion, and I confess I thought it was very weird the first time I heard it. It doesn't sound too weird to me now.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
When you say it attaches to you, what do you mean? Like it then, like you have have more and more of it?
You have more and more of it, and it feeds from that in you, and it feeds itself, and it's like this reciprocal thing. And so you get more envious and more prideful and more gluttonous because you haven't faced and admitted that you have that. And so that leaves us vulnerable to it getting into us. And it sounds creepy. Doesn't sound nearly as creepy to me as it once did. It's like, there's something about it that makes sense. So I'm not asking you to agree or disagree. I'm just asking you to consider that as a possibility. Prices to be paid? So we want to talk about how we are in our wholeness and fullness as human beings impacted by the resistance and the reluctance and the refusal to face, see, and know the undesirable or the unknown parts of ourselves. Is there anybody in the room? Possibly I would be the exception. Kathy might come close because I've done this work long enough that I'm excited about finding every piece of negativity I can. But is there anybody in here that likes to find your negativity, likes to admit it, likes to own up to it? Oh, do you? All right, we have a few more. Usually we're ashamed of it, we hide it, we pretend it's not so, we defend it, and okay, Joe really does like to find hers. I always have to use her as an example. I told her the last time I used her as an example, she got this look of like deer in the headlights. And I said, Joe, I'm sorry. She said, I didn't care. I could always use her as an example. But most of us think it shouldn't be so. Treat ourselves as if it's not so. Certainly in our relationships with other people. Act as if it's not so, and guess what? It's not in truth. That we are stinky, messy, self-centered, hateful, creepy, self-involved beings. Everyone, we wouldn't be here if we weren't that. I'm looking at you, Deb, because I remember the first time you came. Deb raised her hand. I think Kim, too. Are we really that bad? We are. It's how we are formed. We aren't only that. Fortunately, there's much more to us than that. But we can't get to that until we face that we're rotten.
We're rotten.
So how is our relationship to ourselves, our partners, life, and our relationship to death impacted by this fear that we have to just bluntly admit and face ourselves? So we're going to start with our relationship to ourselves, and I think you're going to be stunned. I went over and over when I realized, oh my goodness, how much it cost us for that cowardliness. The first thing is that we are unable to fulfill our individual selves and to tap the infinite dormant capacities that live within us. Now, facing up to our negativity, our weakness, our vulnerability, our pitifulness, our meanness, however you want to name that whole dark world, doesn't mean beating ourselves up for it, holding it against ourselves. It doesn't mean that at all. It means meeting it, knowing it, naming it, and owning it. The second thing is because we are so devoted to pretending that it's not so and hiding it, we live in very painful isolation. Anybody feel that isolation that we live in? I certainly do. And we live in huge aloneness that's born out of our pretending and our hiding and our lying. about who we really are. And again, remember, we're only talking about a part of who we are. But it has a huge impact. And because of this, we're unable to trust and rely upon the highest and the very best in ourselves. We can't trust ourselves because we're pretending about who we are. And in the lecture, like a couple of months back, the guy says, when we pretend about who we are, how can we trust and count on ourselves? We know we're fake. What's trustworthy about fake? And if we can't trust ourselves, then we can't trust others. And then there is a huge loss of self-respect. Because we know we're liars. We know we're cheating. We know we're pretending. We know we're hiding. We know we're being masky. And we're not talking here, by the way, of going out into the world and making a public announcement about what a dark soul you are. Although we could have a meeting one night and do that. It could be really juicy. But it's more about your own personal work, that you face up to it, that you know it, that you admit it, that you sit with it every day in your journal and your meditation. And so it starts becoming integrated into you, into who you are. And when appropriate, you say something about that. You know, like when somebody says to me, you know, because when you stand up here and you do this teaching and you've stepped forth in a spiritual leadership role in Pathwork community, I'm sure you don't have those problems. Count on me. I do. We all do.
Hey, Sue.
Yes.
I want to give you an example of how it really isn't all that appropriate when you're not in the right context about yourself. Some of us have done the YEST programs and the forum and things like that. And so, you know, When I did the original S program, there, you know, you get so used to using these words that, you know, you wouldn't use outside of there, except with each other and so forth. So they become commonplace. Well, I was a young therapist, a new therapist, and I did the S program, and I went back to Gateway, where I was a therapist. And every Monday morning, you know, the therapist and the patient sat together and we talked about how we were going to do the week, and everybody went around and said something. And I just fell from that. And so I said, my name is Kathy, and I'm a sleaze. Everybody, I mean, the room went silent.
In your journaling, in your prayer, that you just connect up with that rotten side of your nature and you bring it home to yourself and you make a home for it. You know, we think that the profound loneliness that we feel for another human being, for love, or however you want to name that, we think it has to do with another person. It doesn't. It has to do with the loneliness in our own hearts because we're so separated from our own fullness and our own wholeness. And when we find it and start to make a home for it, then the first thing we do, those of you who work with me know I challenge this in you all the time, is it shouldn't be that way. I feel depressed. Oh, this is awful. Oh my God, I'm going to hell. Well, that's very painful. Rather than, this is just my piece of consciousness that I carry for the human condition. And when we can't bring it home and we can't own it, there is a profound separation and loneliness in our own souls that we're trying to draw somebody in to solve it for us. And it doesn't work. Doesn't work. The marriage, as a matter of fact, Kay, you want to tell about your ceremony one time?
Yeah, when I married myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a whole wedding with flowers and attendants and a service where I married myself. I mean, I was so separated from who I was. I was just kind of getting conscious about it. This was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the flowers. Because I need to be reminded, you know, I need that physical reminder that, you know, there's me inside there. You
know, and that your most important connection in life is with that meanness and her fullness. Her beauty, her hatefulness, her pettiness, her creativity, her fullness, all that she is. The connection with that is the most important connection that we can form. Okay, Joe? So more prices that we pay for not being willing to face ourselves and our fullness and our darkness is that we feel insecure and unsteady. We think we're insecure and steady because we're not pretty enough, because we're not thin enough, because we don't have enough money, because we had a tragic childhood, on and on and on. We are insecure and unsteady because we haven't married ourselves, because we haven't owned all of who we are and fallen in love with it. That's why we're insecure and unsteady. And I think this is a really important one too. That denial of who we really are creates a thick wall between our ordinary consciousness, what we're sitting here with tonight, and supreme consciousness, higher consciousness, divine consciousness that is in here and that's in the universe that we need more than we can possibly imagine for its gifts, its guidance, its comfort, its consolation. But it can't get in. Why can't it get in?
And what are we hiding?
Lower self.
And what does the lower self cut us off from?
Higher self.
Everything that is infinite about us.
So can I ask you?
Yes.
Yeah, when you just said a minute ago, it could be a nuance and I'm making it too literal, but when you said, you know, accepting all the really nasty stuff and falling in love with it, is it really that, or is it just the idea of accepting, the word acceptance, in a sense that I really see that it is in me and that I don't love that, but it's part of me and I'm okay with that, I've accepted it. Is the nuance loving?
Well, in another lecture, I have no idea which lecture this was. It may have been here or somewhere else I was teaching. I don't remember. Maybe you all will. But, it was in meditation class. If we can see that nastiness, that hatefulness, that self-centeredness, that greediness, that competitiveness, whatever it is that you're looking at, if you can see that as something in you that is suffering and that is in need of your love, then you're bringing it like you would with your own child. If your child is acting out, if at our best as parents, we don't blame and judge and get yourself in shape or you're going to get out of here. It's like, oh, that's a cry for help. That's something vulnerable and broken that needs my love, that needs my attention. So it's more, it's not like you like it. It's that I have to help that part of me.
I get that.
That's broken part of me.
Yeah, that's having compassion for
it. Yes. And really help it. You know, whether it be our rage or our self-hate or whatever it is, I've got to help that part of me. It needs me. It needs my love. Not my exiling it, not my hiding it. We have no peace and liberation within ourselves as long as we're doing this denying and this splitting off of our hatefulness. And again, Joe, go next. No, back up. There's some after no peace and liberation. I have something.
There we go, right here.
Okay, I have something that you don't have. I said it earlier. And it does leave us vulnerable to the negativities in the human condition of wrath, pride, lust, envy, sloth, greed, gluttony, the seven deadly sins. I just thought that was a good one to kind of grab onto and use as an example. If we are denying our own darkness, we're very vulnerable to these seven deadly sins. Many other things, but I'm just using that as an example because I thought it would bring it home really, really well. Okay. So the prices that we pay for our reluctance and our avoidance and our resistance to really facing that which is weak and dark and broken and negative in us. As it comes to our connection with and our union with another person. I love this. The guide says it has us wanting to remain an infant in a parasitical state. And when we are most critical of intimate relationships, when Freud was most critical of intimate relationships, he called them addictive and dependent. Well, that's what the guide is talking about here. If we have not courageous, if we are not on an ongoing basis facing up to our own negativity and bringing it that into a deep communication with our partner, then we remain in an infant and parasitical state, trying to get from that partner something that would make us feel secure, because we're so insecure in ourselves because we are a house divided against itself. Does that make sense? So how can we surrender and really turn ourselves over to a mate, a partner, or a deep friendship to be loved if we are going to be afraid of losing the self that we don't yet have? You know, we're hanging on to ourselves because we don't have ourselves, and that makes it impossible to surrender. Anybody be able to relate to that? Yeah. Makes it terrifying to just let go into the bliss and union of love if you don't feel like you have yourself in your own arms. The terror is, I'm going to disintegrate here, I'm going to die here, I'm going to get killed here. Another price to pay, see if we're on the same page. Okay. Yeah, our little self-will operates, we're trying to be in control, and the guide says as long as we're trying to be in control, that, I thought this was so powerful, opposes love, which we are all yearning for and longing for. Because love won't be controlled. Love flows and moves. And the minute you bring in control, that's not love. It's something. I mean, it might be addiction, it might be dependency, it might be, I don't know what, but it isn't the free flowing of love. And we certainly can't trust the other person if we can't trust ourselves. So the guide says another price that we pay by not doing our own deep reckoning, traveling into the depths of the unknown and our own psyche, then in our connections, we're going to find reasons and excuses to hedge what most needs to be tackled. If we're denying that I have these issues, I have these problems, and I'm not owning up, then when they become an issue in the relationship, we're going to deny them, whatever it is. Does that make sense? We're going to pretend that they're not so. So we are avoiding them, and they don't get tackled and addressed and face in the relationship because we're in denial about them. Anybody ever experienced that? Yeah, exactly. And the guide says, you know, especially the things that we deny, we're going to project onto other people. You're that way. You did that. Meanwhile, hiding that, that's our own character defect, our own darkness. Oh, and of course the biggest one is our inability to accept our partner and their fullness, their strengths and their faults, their full humanity, because there is no self-acceptance. That's probably the biggest price we pay. We're on them constantly, trying to fix, trying to correct, trying to teach, trying to change, because we have not come to acceptance within ourselves. And finally, we're stuck in self-will, clinging to the familiar and clinging to the known. So how about our relationship with life when we have not reckoned with our undesirable, our weak, our broken, and our unknown parts? To begin with, we're disconnected from the inevitable flow of the life stream. We are cut off. We fear the now. We're either traveling back into the past when we got hurt, when we suffered, or when we failed, or when we were wrong. Go back and nurse that. Or we're racing into the future when it can be different and when it can be better. And so we're rushing ahead to get away from the moment. Never in the moment. And it is the experience of the moment, just as it is, with our sadness, our fear, our frustration, our joy, our delight, that holds the key and the promise to what can come next in a dynamic way. When we're fixed on the past and we're fixed on the future, that process gets thwarted and gets stopped. We're terrified of life and we see it as a hostile universe. You know, to me it's like stunning the prices that we pay for not facing ourselves. I don't think I ever got it so fully as I got it in this last lecture. We talk about it a lot. Like all of the difficult experiences that come from our refusal to be, as broken as we are. That we all are, no one's being. We're always trying to stem the tide of life. It's going too fast, or we're rushing it, and we're holding back, and we're holding on. So when we refuse to face and acknowledge our undesirable and unknown and broken parts, we are terrified of death. Death is the great unknown, the great mystery. And so we fear the unknown nature of death because we haven't honestly faced the terror of our own deaths. And we haven't honestly faced the terror of our surrendering to love with another person. We can feel death as a defeat and humiliating because we have to give up self-direction. Pride is involved here. When we die, death is in charge, not us. And we're terrified of that. We're fear of the loss of control when we die. We're not in charge. And so knowing that our self-will, our little miserable self, is not going to be able to control the situation is very, very frightening. And we're very alienated and estranged from death, as if death is not a part of the human experience. Something that happens to others over there, not us. And so when we miss the power of facing head on, day in, I got a story about this tonight, and met with a friend who is dying today. To miss the power of facing the reality head on, which could give us aliveness for today. I visited a friend today who, I don't know what the lung condition is, but something thrombosis in it. What is it, Jared?
Pulmonary fibrosis?
Yes, yes. And she's already receiving hospice care. This woman was such an inspiration to me. I said, can I come see you again? And I'm not going to see her to, like, give her support. I'm going to see her for the inspiration that she gave me. She said, I take on a project every day. I taught my husband how to cook apple pie and lady locks over the weekend. And meanwhile, she's up and down, and she can barely move because of the pain of her, the condition of her lungs. She had all of her photograph albums on her dining room table. My project today is I'm going to do my photograph albums. Alive, laughing, talking. I'm ready to die, she said. I'm ready to go. And I was so clear that some of what makes this possible for this woman is how full out she plays and lives. As on her bucket list was to have a horse. She doesn't ride her horse. She can't, but she has him. She goes on a wheelchair to go see him, to groom him and pet him. She did her bucket list. I mean, she just lives full out, and she's not afraid of dying. And that was really inspiring for me. Okay, Joe. So, let's do the other side. When we overcome the resistance to our undesirable parts and our broken parts by being in truth, what does that mean? What does being in truth about our broken parts mean?
Acknowledging, accepting.
Telling the truth with ourselves about it, day in and day out. And that will become integrated into, you know, how we bear ourselves with other people. Doesn't mean you go out and announce all your crap to other people, but it'll become a part of you. So this is what we get from that. We get to fulfill on that infinite dormant potential that lives inside of us. We start to dissolve that lower self because we've owned it. And the guide is not saying, change your gluttony, change your greed, change your pride, change your hatefulness. The guide is saying, know it, see it, own it, observe it, admit to it, know that it exists. That opens the door to your dormant potentials. The other thing that it opens the door to is that which is broken in you is in need of healing. What heals it? What's going to heal that which needs to be transformed in us?
Our higher self.
Right, our higher self. Not our personality, ego self. Tomorrow I am never going to be angry again. Next week, I'm going to lose 50 pounds. From our mind, from our personality. But when we admit, I'm a glutton, I eat way too much food for my size, I'm a glutton, God help me, God help me, then we have opened ourselves to the potential that's within us, the higher self, the infinite capacity, that it can come in and do its own healing work, which is very different from what we do. Gotta fix myself, gotta fix myself, gotta fix myself. Do we ever get ourselves fixed? No. Okay.
I like the way you put that about the clouds.
Yes, that's the guide, not me. But the guide says that then the clouds between the awareness that we're sitting with here right now and our higher consciousness begin to disperse. And I love this quote too. The sum of the higher forces in the universe and within us can begin to shine through. And the sun is constantly ready to warm and enliven us. Do you like that? We're going to do a meditation with that tonight. The sun is constantly ready to warm and enliven us.
Is there a reason you have parentheses on that one?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I guess it didn't fit with the way I had it ordered. But the ticket to admission is what? For the sun to be able to warm us.
To get all this acceptance of this dark side.
All of this acceptance of this dark side. That's the ticket to admission. Okay, John. So we get to connect with the higher self in self and in life. That's no small matter, guys. Listen to that. We get to connect with our higher selves. And we think that we're going to connect with our higher selves when we get ourselves educated enough, we have enough money, we're thin enough, we're pretty enough, we're kind enough, we're given enough service, blah, blah, blah. That's not what's going to connect us with our higher selves. And not that those things aren't important. What's going to connect us with our higher selves? I'm going to keep asking you over and over because we don't want to know this. What will connect us? Joe?
Get that dark stuff and get it, understand it, and accept it.
Yes. And make a home for it here with me rather than, go, oh, I can't stand it. You're mine. You belong to me. You're right here in my own being. You are my Sue self, my Joe self, my Henry self. You belong with me and all that's wonderful about me as well. I love this one too, is that we can start to see the truth of our self-will, our pride, and our fear. And again, fear is nothing other than not trusting the goodness in us and the goodness in life. The guide says that we have huge amounts of energy trapped in our self-will, our pride, and our fear. Huge energy that will be made available to this here and now moment, if we can see the truth of our self-will. That was just a self-will thing. That was a prideful thing I just said. Let me take that back. Let me put in some correction. Oh my God, the reason I'm terrified is I don't trust that there's anything in me to count on. I don't trust that there's goodness around me to lean into. Oh, I see that. I observe that. That's not in truth. I can release that. This is no small matter here either. What would it be like to experience self-acceptance, self-respect, embracing self-reliance, true dignity, and selfhood? What would that be like? And again, we think we have to get ourselves educated enough, good enough, give enough service, be pretty enough, smart enough, get enough money, make enough of it, get enough approval, and then we will get true dignity and selfhood. Did it work for you? No. It's a total illusion. It doesn't work. What does work is to honestly, completely, fully own all that we are with love and compassion and a sense of deep responsibility. Then we can have true dignity and selfhood. This one's really, really important to me, this next one, because I've been working on it very much with my own helper. Our own individuality and harmony with God. And what I understand about that is that there is only one of me. There is only one of you. No one else on the planet has your history, your DNA, the order of your biology, never has been, doesn't now, and will not, and no one has your story. Your siblings grew up in the same family. Their story is not your story. There is only one Trudy. Never will be another. And to bring that into which you're really working on now and working on your music, like bringing that individuality in harmony with God, is one of the gifts that come from our facing how dark and pathetic and limited and weak and all that we are. That's a huge outcome. Okay, so next. And we get to experience the peace and the liberation of not holding back. Like we're constantly holding back because, why are we doing that? Why are we holding back and controlling and contracting and adjusting? What's that about?
Fear.
Fear of what?
Everything.
Of what?
Everything.
Yeah, but how about ourselves?
Our lower self.
Yeah. We're very afraid of our own undeservingness, inadequacy. I don't have what it takes. I'm not a child of God. I'm not good. I've done awful things. We hold back. Another gift is being in the now just as it is, with its mystery, its pain, its joy, its sorrows, without resisting it, without fighting it. Nowness, presence. And finally, I said this before and you asked the question about it, Joe, being in love with self. We think we have to get ourselves perfect in order to fall in love with ourselves. Will that ever happen? I'm 74, I've been working on this stuff since my late 20s. I get one handle, then here's another one. If I'm waiting to get perfect, I'll never fall in love with myself. Falling in love with ourselves as we are, because we own ourselves, all of ourselves, just as we are, with affection. Remember last month, I got so much reaction from this, by the way, that every human being is worthy of affection and respect. And this is why, what we're talking about. What we want to do is hold against each other our nastiness as if we don't all have it. And we're all bearing up under it. So every human being is worthy of dignity and respect. Okay? So when we can be in truth about ourselves, how does it affect our desire for union and relationship and being in love? We can give ourselves over to a maid, a partner, or a friend without the fear of losing ourselves. We can surrender to love and union and bliss. We can really connect with the other person from our real self. You know, we think being real means blasting another person with what we think is wrong with them. What real really means is revealing who we are to our partner. This is where I'm scared. This is where I'm broken. This is where I just blew it. I'm sorry for what I just said. You know? Revealing ourselves as being real. And we are only able to do that if we can be real with ourselves. Yeah? I love this one too. That we get the gift of fearless willingness, because there's nothing to be afraid of anymore. We're not hiding our crap. We're not rejecting it. Why do we have to be if we're fearless? And so we can be very, very willing. The self-possession of self-responsibility. We give up correcting, teaching, fixing, and blaming the other, and we're responsible for our own selves in the relationship. And we accept our partners in their fullness. We're waiting for them to get perfect too, and then we'll accept them, by the way. We're going to accept them in their fullness as we have now accepted ourselves in our fullness. Do you think you can accept the fullness of another person when you haven't accepted in you? I haven't been able to yet. I notice everything that's missing and wrong about all of you. And I'm always trying to fix it.
That's your job.
That's my job. That's good, Alexander. So we accept our partners in their fullness as we have accepted ourselves. What a phenomenal gift that is. You know, like when I stop and let myself really presence, and I hope you are doing this as well, what could come to us by accepting all that we have been, all the ways that we have been broken, our compulsions, our lying, our stealing, our unconsciousness that made us do things that were harmful to ourselves and other people, our stupidity, our failure, our errors. If we could just say, yeah, feel terrible about it, but it's mine. All the gifts that could come, it's phenomenal. It's almost like not believable. You know? It's almost not believable. But we have to remember the enormous resistance we have to do in this. Unbelievable resistance. I didn't say that! No, I didn't do that! How could you say that about, oh my God, that hurts my feelings so much. That's the way we are. But if we could start seeing it and catching it and knowing it and say, there it is. And look what all it is depriving me of. Life. Okay, Jim. So if we can be in truth on our stuff, on our weaknesses, give up the resistances, we are able to melt into the stream of life that is infinite, eternal, inevitable, and cannot be stopped. It cannot be stopped. We can only stop ourselves, separate ourselves from it, but it can't be stopped. We can be in harmony with the cosmic stream, whatever that is, this moving, flowing, teeming, bursting with creation. We can be a part of it because we're not separated from it by our cowardly denying that we are. We won't be holding back or we won't be pushing forward. We'll just be here right now with what is, drink it in, and wait for what's next. We'll be in the flow unafraid. How wonderful would that be? And we'll be in joy. So the ticket of admission is owning ourselves and not fixing ourselves. I'm going to say that one again. The ticket of admission is owning ourselves, not fixing ourselves.
Thank God.
I mean, you can do all the fixing that you want to do, but you're not going to get this juice. I mean, you might get skinnier, you might get prettier, you might get whatever. You're not going to get this. Okay, Joe. So if we can be in truth about our allness, all of who we are, we will see death as an organic development in the order of things. Whoever saw death as development? As a developmental phase. We'll see death as a part of what it is that we do. It's what we do. We'll see that death is a blissful surrendering and letting go, which is what I saw with my friend today. It was just really amazing. Bright-eyed, happy. She's ready. Vet was very able to say, I'm ready. We'll see that life and death are one, the same thing, all consciousness. And she talked about that today. She said, I know it's only this that's going. You can't kill consciousness. That goes on. I'll just go on to whatever is next. Okay. So to the degree that you know yourself, you fulfill your life, yourself, and your dormant potential. And to that degree, death will not be feared, but experienced as organic development,
Self-realization means dissolving the barriers within ourselves so that we can dissolve the barriers between us and loving someone else. The barriers to life itself, and finally self and the cosmic stream, and death. So again, repetitive. I love this about the guy, and I'm learning to do this myself in my teaching, because we resist these principles. You'll walk out of here tonight and you won't even remember them. So the keys are self-discovery through truth and self-honesty, finding and admitting the parts that we're afraid of and that we shy away from. When we're upset with others, we first look within self for what piece of my false self is stirred. And every tiny step dissolves a bit of the clouds between us and life's timeless stream. So, when the clouds disperse, with every speck of dispersal of the clouds, contact the inner source of peace, truth, life that lives within you, underneath the falseness, and you will find and comprehend the sign of creation. I got that from this lecture for the first time, too, even though I've read it a zillion times, that everything that is cosmically about creation is in us. All the universal laws are in us. All truth is in us. And we just have to find a way to get there. So you can understand why I wanted to do the review with the mask, the lower self, and the higher self tonight, right? So what we're really talking about is giving up the mask that wants to pretend, that wants approval, that wants to be seen a certain way, so that we can really see how nasty we are, and so the clouds can disperse, and we can find the beauty and the infinite joy, the dormant capacities, the wisdom, the truth, the strength, the everything that is in us. How many of you believe that? That it's in you. Great. It took me a long time to like really accept that. I had an easier time accepting my nastiness than really knowing that there is like this infinity in us. And it really makes the work worthwhile. And what happens is that you'll see that as you do the work, a little more and a little more and a little more will flow into you. And you'll find yourself more loving. You'll find yourself more truthful. You'll find yourself saying, I don't know, I have no idea. Or you'll find yourself, as I had to do with somebody yesterday, I'm sorry, I forgot, I feel terrible. I did that with Deb last week. I'm sorry, completely dropped you out. What can I say? I did. And you'll find that happening more and more, that with a greater ease, you will be able to do that. So before we go to our meditation, I'm good with time. I want to throw the floor open for questions, comments, how this sat with you, where you are with it. Is everybody cold?
Yeah.
My feet are freezing. Yes. Yeah.
So that I would ask that question that it lingers around in my head, and somebody started to say it before, I think, and you addressed it by saying, you know, you don't hold these things against yourself. The fact that you know that you're nasty and... you know, you're spiteful and you're greedy and you're... But there is... It takes quite a bit of effort, I think, to not say, see, I knew that about myself, I'm a rat. No, it's like, it's hard enough to come to self-love in the first place, but admitting that these things are truly a fact. How... I mean, so what's the thought on that? What I appreciate you said, don't hold it against yourself. That's a nice directive, but how do we...
It's the guide's answer to everything, which is observe and see that you hold it against yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, I see that.
Yeah.
I'm holding that against myself. That's all you have to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
which I didn't. Maybe someday I won't. But I see that I'm holding it against myself. And then breathe. That's all. But we forget to do that too. Other questions, comments? Yes, Billy.
Also, could everybody just pass the, I meant to collect the participation form, if you could just pass them back. Every time you talk about that you're 70, whatever years old, you've been doing this work for 97 years, could you give us a progress report? I worry that, you are already starting out better than I am, so, by the time I'm 172, I should be all set. So, can you put it to context?
Yeah, I can. I think it's a wonderful question. I got a text or an email from someone this week who, I can't remember exactly how it went, but, you said you've been doing this, work for a long time, and, where did you get, or something like that. Because this was a particular person that I had owned some stuff with. What you get is that you have the same stuff. I have the same stuff I had in my 20s. You have the same stuff. But you have more joy. You have more liberation. You have more connection with your kids and your friends. All of this that we've been talking about tonight, you have more. As you do the work, you get more of that. You might not get anything else. You might not get all the things that you think you have to have, but you get that. So, liberation, peace, you just get more of that. Of the higher self experience starts flowing in. There are a lot of times that, I'm very alive and fulfilled and excited and happy, but there are a lot of times I'm in the pits and I'm in the darkness because I'm doing that next damn layer that will bring even more light. So, does that answer your joke? Yeah?
Well, I think people like you and Kathy McAllister, for me, are two people, since you've done the work, it's not as hard.
Right.
It really isn't. So it's not like we're starting back in the dark ages. You have already cleared the path in a way that makes it attainable.
Yeah.
And we see by your honesty and hard work that that's all that it takes.
Right.
Being honest. And
that is what it takes.
And I have been mad at Bill for a month now. And I've been really looking at it.
Good.
I've just been like
just watching it,
and I can see how that, and I can actually feel the energy of it, and how that's normal for me. That feels like normal.
Yeah.
And now I'm just starting.
So
to
you're watching it and distinguishing it.
And not that I don't fall into it, but I'm finding myself watching it more and more and more, and it
great.
Is such a great. It certainly isn't fun.
No.
But it is, and I don't like that negative pleasure that Sue wants to point out that I do. I don't have that with this. It's like a more of a honest looking at it rather than a gleeful, oh, isn't this fun? So it's a much more, it feels like a more developed appreciation for the separation that it really causes rather than this bullshit stuff that I usually do.
That's great.
Oh, yeah, it's fun, Sue.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, I was wondering if you could answer Bill's question, having been in the work yourself for a long time, like, why do we do it, and what's the difference, and, like, what would the progress report be?
My sleazy self is acceptable. It is hard to put into words. It really is, because it's my everyday life. It's nothing spectacular. It's about the way I walk around and how I feel. And how deep down I know that I can get moments where I can tell the truth, and that that lasts. That for a long time that lasts, because I don't know when the next time I am going to tell the truth. You know what I mean? It's like that. It's not anything great. It's just like, wow, I did that. But it's deep in me when I did it. I really did it. And so, And the rest is the rest. I mean, it's like more joy. I don't know how much joy I'm going to have, but when I have it, I have it. When I had joy before I could even experience joy, I was on to try and find the next joy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I have joy, I know it. I don't try to hold on to it. It's that.
Yeah.
That's the best I can do with it. It's very hard to put into words.
Nancy?
Would you guys say you have less fear?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that part of the whole thing? Because...
less fear, more self-acceptance,
yeah.
More peace. Yeah.
What I would say about it is, I have fear that I know now that I have fear. That's a big game for me. Because a lot of my life, I had fear, and Sue was the first one that I had that experience with. She said to me one day, 30 years ago, "I bet you were afraid." And I said, "Afraid?"
It doesn't fit with your mask.
Afraid? I don't even get the concept. I thought, I really mean that. So I live my life just not acknowledging her. So, you see, it isn't less fear. It's much more, I know that I'm afraid now.
Mm-hmm.
That's good for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one more, and then we're going to hear a song and do meditation thing.
I was going to say, sometimes when you do have the opportunity to face something really creepy about yourself with someone else, you can actually laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've had that experience a few times.
Yeah.
And it's because if you accept it, they like it's a mutual acceptance. Yes, this occurred. I was responsible for it. I don't. It's just weird.
Uh-huh.
Looking back on it, you can just.
That reminds me of one more point to make. That's a really good share, Pam. Is that because there is only one consciousness, and there is only really one of us, and we're all really alike. And we suffer the same things. We're afraid in the same ways. We're mean in the same ways. Mine might be a little here and bigger here. And there's only one of us. And so when we start coming clean and getting honest with ourselves, with another person, we're giving our real selves to them. And they can love that and give themselves back. When we give our false selves, we're intimidating. People see us as righteous. They feel inferior to us. Or all that crap. Just, give ourselves as we are. There's just one of us here, and we're all alike. We're 99.99% alike. I don't care how you act. I don't care what your job is. I know who you are, because you're the same thing I am, and I know me well by now. So, all right, I want to leave time for a meditation and a closing song. So get yourself kind of relaxed while I get the music set up. So I'm going to do a meditation, and then I want you to stay in meditation, and I'm going to close with a song. If it takes me a minute to get it set up, because I'm not always great at this, just bear with me and stay in your meditative place. Okay. Get yourselves comfortable, feet on the floor, back straight if you can. Take a couple of deep breaths. Soft noise on the exhale. I am willing to see and own everything about me. I am willing to make a home for it all. I'm willing to give up wishing, hoping, shooting, and just be with the now as I am, full of strengths and full of faults. As I stand in my honesty, I welcome the sunshine of truth to warm me, to soften me, to comfort and console me. As I do this again and again, I will patiently and in faith wait for the clouds between me and my infinite self to disperse, so that the true wisdom, the love, the power, and the strength that live within me can shine through me and can heal my life. Can shine through me and heal my life.
Thank you.
That is a woman who I would say is in her individuality and her harmony with God. So go in peace and go in God.